You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasserin Securities. He's back. He's gone on an American odyssey on a selfless fact-finding mission, and he's going to report back to us now on that. How was it, David? Did you enjoy yourself? And also, did you come back enriched? When I say enriched, I mean professionally.
Yeah, I did. I learned a lot, you know, because of the meeting, not the meetings I had. I went mainly for the Jewish holidays, and that meant, you know, two major dinners where there were at least 50 people at each, and then breaking your fast, another 50 people. And I went to a couple of lectures where there were a lot. And you gather and you pick up information. You know, you pick up a feel for what's happening. You talk to the people in an informal way. And you learn, you know, you talk to their children, you find out what the kids are doing. And so I got a nice feel for where America is. And I'm very positive about America, you know, when I compare it with the rest of the world. And I think the one thing that it translates to is that, especially in South Africa, people believe that the rand's going to get better. I don't see it. I think that the rand, we've seen the best in the rand. And I think that as things progress, as America growth starts to pick up, I think it's going to start widening its lead on other Western countries and certainly leaving emerging markets behind. So I think money will flow back into, you know, I'm trying to summarize it. I think money will flow back into, you know, into the U.S., not because of interest rates, but rather because of growth opportunities, you know, wanting to be part of it. This is where we want to be. So I think that's one thing I picked up, you know, when you feel the energy of people involved in industry. They're not braggarts. They all work hard. You know, they're not fund managers in that kind of way, or traders, or trying to, you know, they just get down to real business, whether it's in biotech, whether they're an accountant, a lecturer at Harvard, whatever it is. So I picked up a good vibe about, you know, about America. I think this is ignoring politics, which we can come to.
Yes, we'll definitely come to politics. We have to, and we can talk about tech as well, and we can talk about the consistent new highs that we've had ever since. Yeah. Probably every single one out of 2 days that you were there, there was a new high on the stock market. And let's talk about that first, because this is a very US-centric chat we're going to have. It's what we've always said. I mean, you get a dip in NVIDIA and whatever other stocks that you're involved in. You're not worried. Because you know it's gonna bounce back, and bounce back it has. I mean, look at the Nasdaq; it's a superb performance.
In fact, in the FT this weekend, I think it was Bank of America. There was a report that NVIDIA is cheap, and they've set their price up to 190. It's at 140 at the moment. So I think tech, having rested for a bit, is still going to be the big driver, and it's AI. Related, that's going to be the big driver. But Lindsay, there are a lot of funny enough, as I was waiting for you to call, I was looking at a company called Quanta Services, Quanta Services. And the reason why is that energy transmission and supply of energy is now becoming a massive theme. You know, simply because, like in the like in South Africa, except that the US is in a much better shape, very little has been plowed into energy in the, you know, decades. Now the demand is going up to feed the data centers. You know, I think it was in the New York Times, I read about, wanting to introduce these small little
nuclear power stations. Yes, I saw the feature on that. Yes. Now, that's very, very interesting. I don't know how they do it, but they obviously are doing it. What was the company that was doing it? I think Amazon is one that is pioneering in that regard. But portable nuclear power stations to drive the electricity generation required by AI. That's very interesting. And I don't know, is it dangerous? But I don't know enough about it. But very as innovative.
Long as, Homer Simpson, as long as Homer Simpson's not in charge, you know, you're okay. Mr. Burns.
Yes. Montgomery Burns. Release the hounds, Smithers. Okay, so that's all going well, and they continue to innovate, not just with their own products, but also producing their own products because of the energy situation. So that's good, even if it is slightly
it's a whole
disturbing.
New theme. Yeah, it's a new theme. So this is not fracking or not. I suppose gas will be used in greater quantities than that, but this is not the Trump type. Requirement, you know, to go into fossil fuels. It's a much cleaner energy, but I think the energy requirement is increasing. And the infrastructure around that is important, you know, building it, the transmission lines, and making sure it gets to the right places. So a lot of this is all related to AI and the development of technology. You know, it's kind of a branch of ancillary to technology. So I haven't made up our minds yet, and I'm still looking for companies. I like operating businesses, you know, businesses that are already operating, making money, that are going to benefit and grow as a result of that. So, you know, that is a theme. The other theme, and I think we've spoken about this, Lindsay, is that we're also looking for private equity because I think the private equity is taking the role, and I might have spoken to you about this before, of financing projects. You know, they're much more aggressive. They're much more they're not driven by regulation, because the banks now have got so many forms and so many issues to consider before they lend money or finance anything. So I think what's happening is that the banks lend money to the private equity, who then go and finance these projects, infrastructural projects. So also looking for private equity businesses that are in that kind of area, you know, renewable energy, energy transmission, and also AI, you know, data centers around that. So it's all related to AI, but it's much more the, what do you call it, the wires and the screws and that type of stuff, rather than the chips.
It is interesting to see if there would be any spin-off industries to AI. I mean, it's like the old story of, if there's an airport built, you don't invest in an airline, you invest in the land around the airline, because the hotels are going to be built there and all that sort of thing. There must be auxiliary industries, that was the word I was looking for, that feeds AI. And with the generation of power, you've already nailed it with an auxiliary industry that they need. It's like crypto as well. They need so much energy to produce Bitcoin and all the other things. So yes, there's going to be so many different opportunities, David, and it's your job to unlock them, of course.
That's why I remain, you know, I remain kind of not obsessed, but certainly interested in that theme. You know, I've got no interest in looking at British American Tobacco. You know, it's a smoking company, you know, or AB InBev, or Beckett and Renton, you know, what these P&G, Procter & Gamble, who make nappies, or you know, things
Johnson
like
and
that.
Johnson.
Johnson and Johnson. Yeah. Johnson and Johnson, a drug company, they've got some. But, I mean, I just find it more interesting in that. And that's why I continue to push down, you know, the same line, just expanding it slightly into what you say, ancillary industries. And that because I just as we talk now, you know, I see that, you know, tech is still the big driver. It's still edging up step by step. The results will come out over the next couple of weeks. We'll see, you know, we'll see exactly how they're doing. So it is a driver, but it's something that intrigued me while I was there. And I was just talking to the youngsters, and the beauty about America, and as opposed to South Africa, and I don't say it in a criticism about South Africa. I'm saying it's a challenge. It's something to benchmark, you know, rather than criticize the US, take an example for them. Because if you're a young person, Lindsay, I mean, can you imagine? You go to university and you study engineering, or you study computer sciences, or you study, you know, whatever. You then the chances of you progressing your education are so much greater because you can go to the best universities, knowing also that the huge amount on research and development by the US companies gives you an opportunity to practice, do more research, and progress your career. You know, you can't do that here.
And do you get a sense that the companies like NVIDIA, for example, or Amazon or whoever it may be, looking to progress their AI aspirations, they take someone, they take a youngster who's promising a school and says, you're going to go to Stanford and you're going to do this, and in 3 years' time, we want first dibs on you. Does that still go on? Because I know it used to in different types of industries ages ago.
It must be. You know, I can't say yes or no, but I'm sure that, you know, that's available. So they are looking. You know, I spoke to quite a few people in biotech in Boston because that's the area, you know, a lot happens in Boston. That's where kind of almost a center. And what happens, they're constantly looking for technicians, you know, I mean, scientists, because they're in areas, you know, they're not in kind of just making pills or something like this and putting them in plastic bags or something. You know, they're looking for new ways. So there's so much innovation in that area. So anybody interested in that field, you know, who doesn't want to be an investment banker, I can't stand that, you know, and these poor kids, the Goldman still come and grab these chaps and make them work 100 hours a week and so on, or more even. But for other people who are much more scientifically motivated, there's wonderful opportunities. And I say, you know, why don't you get close to, you know, why doesn't South Africa offer to, you know, in other words, have facilities here like they have in India, and rather work that way, you know, forge relationships rather than kind of push them away. You know, forge relationship with big business in America. Become friendly to the West. I
throw
know
off the shackles of your socialist past. That's what I think South Africa needs to do without getting too deep into it. But yes, I saw a very interesting documentary about America last night in the early hours. I end up watching rallies, and then another program comes on, and before you know it, I'm dead by but time it gets to 11, 12 o'clock. I have to go and have a nap or something. But anyway, it was by a very, very intelligent man called Fareed Zakaria. He's so good, and it was called America First. It was a documentary about how America First started, and that was in the 1920s, 1928, in fact, with Charles Lindbergh, who flew across the Atlantic, obviously famously, first person to cross the Atlantic in an aeroplane, and he became a national hero. I mean, he was the most famous man in the world, and he started America First. He was very, and America First was an anti-war movement. But when you fast forward and go to the America First that we know now because of a certain gentleman by the name, another type of person called Donald Trump, his America First is all to do with isolationism. And Fareed Zakaria was going on about how dangerous this is to America and the tariffs and everything. And I don't know if you saw Trump saying the most beautiful word in the dictionary is tariffs. And I found it really, really disturbing. Not quite as disturbing as Elon Musk's behavior in the last week. He's now giving people, he's giving a vote. Yeah. He's saying, go out and vote in the swing states, like Pennsylvania, which is the one that they're all focusing on. And he gives them $1 million. You know, he says, if you're voting now for Trump, you've got a chance to win this. And he's giving $1 million away per day. Yeah. And they're saying this is illegal. And I can see that it probably is because it's coercive. But he's becoming very, very weird, David.
Totally. And I think, you know what worries me and about the relationship between, first of all, there's no doubt Musk is after his own business. You know, that's why he's cozying up.
Yeah.
I think the electric vehicles, he gets tariffs, you know, reductions from because they're electric, he gets tax breaks. Also, if they're tariffs, you're going to prevent against whether it's a European or Chinese vehicles coming in. And then he's got SpaceX. He needs the government contracts to do that. All of it is related to what he's producing, you know. And I think Trump wants to make him minister of something. I can't remember, of cost-cutting or minister of who knows. And it's made him totally weird. You know, I look at the man now whom I did admire simply because of his entrepreneurship and wonderful, you know, thought process. I can't tolerate him now. No. And you know what's weird? This is beginning to look like one of these, James Bond movies where you've got these people who are trying to take over the world and build this kind of a technology world which will give
Yeah, you're quite right. He actually has got the look of a Bond villain, hasn't he? Yes.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's one of those. It's and you know, probably more related to Austin Power. You know, what is that to those villains? He's such a clown. But I find it disturbing. And you know, just kind of summing up why people hate Kamala. Really, everybody that I spoke to hated both candidates. But at least she's honest. You know, she doesn't use this vile language. She doesn't. She respects the Constitution. She respects law. You know, she doesn't go up on the stand and curse people or try and divide or put fear into people. And she's like almost a calming presence. She has this calming presence rather than Trump, who's just this monster of a person.
He's never got a nice thing to say, you see. He's never positive about anything. No. He never smiles or laughs. He's constantly vile and bordering on evil. And also getting weirder and weirder. You've heard I don't know if you've seen it or read about the Arnold Palmer incident of 2 days ago. Have you heard of this?
My wife was trying to explain it to me, but she got things mixed up. She didn't know who Arnold Palmer was.
Oh, well, then in that case, I'll tell you. Very famous golfer. Of course, and he's dead now. But he was he's like alongside the greats. People, I don't like golf, but I know I watch enough telly to know about it. Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and people like that, and Arnold Palmer. Was perhaps the greatest of the three that I've just mentioned. And anyway, Trump stands up at the beginning of his rally and starts talking about Arnold Palmer. And he says, well, Arnold Palmer has a golf course near here, or used to play at a golf course near here, and went on about how he came from very humble beginnings and couldn't buy a golf club and so would borrow one and go and hit the ball at night or whatever. And he kept on about this for about 12 minutes. They timed it, 12 minutes. And everyone's sort of looking around and thinking, when's this story about Arnold Palmer going to end? And it ended as follows. He said, and the other golfers told me that they came away from the showers after having showered with Arnold Palmer with their sort of mouths gaping because of the size of his genitalia.
Okay, and he talked
about that. He talked about how big he was in that area. And I thought, you want to be the president of the United States? And he went on about how they were really, really good friends. And I looked this up, and there was an interview with his daughter, Arnold Palmer's daughter, that was published in 2020, and said he hated Trump because he cheated, not only in his normal life, his professional life, but also on the golf course. So all this crap about him being friends was exactly that. But do you really want to talk about that sort of thing when you're trying to win voters? Maybe you do win voters because people think, well, that's quite funny. I didn't. I found it very distasteful, but then I'm a bit of a prude.
Yeah, that's what I cannot get my head around. I cannot get my head around that here's a man, you know, who thinks he's the greatest president ever, you know, and he'll... And when I love history. I've just read a book called The Demons of Unrest, which is about the start of the Civil War in the United States. And you know they bring a lot. You know, they draw in a lot about Lincoln, and he had just been nominated or elected president, and so on. And when you look at him and you understand the history of Washington, you know, who was a general who didn't want to be president, or Jefferson, these men who formed America and the values they stood for. Trump is as far away from them as, I don't know, as Xi or Putin.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't embody what America stood for, what we believed America stood for. He's just so far away. And yet, you know, it's Lindsay, it's on a knife edge of this election. Wow. You can't call it.
It's leaning his way, unfortunately. He's up in the swing states. He's got three, and Harris has two. So I don't know. But anything can happen. There's still got 15 days to go. Let's not be too despondent. Maybe some people, when the polls are, when you know, you go to a shopping mall or something, and they say, who are you voting for? You can't really say Trump. It's too embarrassing. So they probably say, no, you can't say Harris, so you say, I'm voting for Trump. I don't know what it is, but I don't believe the polls at the moment. I can't believe them, because if I start believing them, then I'm going to start to get, as I say, really despondent about the future. Because the smug look on his face, if he becomes president, and what he does in his first few days of being the president is just beyond. I can't bear it. I can't bear the prospect of it.
I know. You have to go into hibernation for 4 years. I can't. I mean this. You know, I can't even listen to. And when the newscasts come on, they start to promote or give inserts about his various talks, and I just turn off. I cannot listen to him. I cannot tolerate him and everything that he stands for. And it's just sad. I because it's 50-50. It means that, 50 people vote for him, 50 don't. But unfortunately, he's going to make it that everybody voted for you. And we're going to hear it.
Sends a shiver down my spine, Shapiro. David, let's talk about markets. Markets are fine. We don't need to talk about markets. We've covered the most important things. And for the next 2 weeks, that's what we're going to do. We'll talk about markets with Viv on Thursday. But, David, football over the weekend was very interesting. My team lost 2-0, Ipswich Town. Your team lost 2-0, Arsenal. City and Liverpool both won 2-1. And it just seems to me that, Your team's more important because Ipswich would be very lucky if they stay up. But your team is more important because this will be the third or fourth time, if they don't make it, that Arteta has failed, and that calls into question his leadership.
I'm worried about the attitude of some of the players. You know, that out of 8 games, there have been 3 sending offs.
Yeah.
You can't win the league like that. And there was a lot of sloppiness about their play. And not only that, they're not finishing. They're getting the opportunities. They're getting, in other words, to score. Martinelli's missing. Everybody's missing what should be training ground goals. You know, in other words, where you're training hours a day and this is your job, is to put the ball in the back of the net, and you can't do that, then you've got to be worried. You know, that's a deep concern of mine, that all 8 games that they've played, I think, have been struggles. They've been struggles, even though they've managed to come away with some decent points, they haven't glided through. And yesterday was a game, or Saturday was a game, which they shouldn't have had any trouble, and yet they self-destruct. So when you look at City, they're a slick, still a very, very solid, slick team. And they play very good football, a beautiful football. Even Liverpool are well disciplined and a good team. I'm concerned about them. You know, I'm concerned that they've got to pull up something now. You know, that maybe he's not strict enough with them. They love him, but there's just something that does disturb me.
Yeah, it's the composition of the team. I don't know. When I look at City, although they've got lots of injuries, there's no Kyle Walker, no Kevin De Bruyne, and there's another one. What's the one that's out for the whole season? The really elegant tall...
Rodri.
He's not there. And yet, they've got 3 or 4 players who would normally be first on the team sheet. They've gone, and yet they still managed to play like a team. As you've always said, they could put 2 teams out every week.
Yeah. Foden wasn't even on the pitch.
He came on as a sub, but
that's a luxury that that other teams haven't got. Mm. You know, that only City have got. So, I fear that this is going to be just another season. Newcastle have fallen away. Spurs, I don't know. You know, they came away against West Ham. But I think it's Aston Villa are very competent.
They really
but
are.
I don't know whether you know, they're competent. I don't know whether they can last the, you know, whether they've got the depth to go through the whole season. But, I had a miserable week. And when what's her name, you know, I knew it. I just, you know, when you got that feeling, that, the same as against Arsenal.
Yes.
That City, we're not going to lose.
Yes, you know, I was watching it, and I was confident right up to the last seconds that they were going to score. And, of course, Stones came in and powered it. The vitriolic abuse on X about the referee and VAR and Manchester City was quite startling even to me, and I use the old swear word here and there. For goodness me, they had a go at that decision. I thought it was fair.
Bernardo Silva, and he moved away in well in advance.
He's 1 foot tall, and the goalkeeper's 7 foot tall, and he ducked. He wasn't obscuring his view at all.
No, he wasn't. He's no different from many teams hustle the goalkeeper and that. Yeah. And he knew when to pull out.
Mm.
You know, he knew. I agree with you. You know, when I saw the replays, I thought, oh God, you know, this is not going to, this is going their way. You know, it's a goal.
Yeah.
And anyway, but.
Yeah, it was good. All good fun. And we got Champions League this week.
I feel for Ipswich. And I'm not saying it because I know that they're trying their hardest and then they do stupid things at the back.
Such stupid things. They're so naive.
No,
what did they do? They give goals away. I mean, it's almost as though, I don't know, they're trying to make money with a bookmaker before the match. Say, listen, I'm going to pass the ball to Everton. So, give me a bung or something. Yeah.
Southampton are like that as well.
Mm.
Southampton go 2-0 up to Leicester, lose 3-2.
It's astonishing that they couldn't hold on to that lead.
When you 2-0 up, you've got to have a plan. Yes, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to, you don't want to get too lackadaisical or too sloppy, but there's a different plan. You adopt things, you make it difficult for them to score, you know. Anyway, I just 3 goals. Poor Southampton. Anyway.
Whatever. Anyway, Champions League on Tuesday and Wednesday, which will be quite exciting, David. And we'll speak again on Thursday with Viv Govender. Thank you very much and welcome home.
Right.
David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities back in Johannesburg. And that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.